Here are four principles for living like an American. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for every gift and opportunity. Become a source of love. Once again, these are the times that try our souls. We must find the strength and the courage to rise up to refound America in the spirit of liberty. Well, hello, my wonderful audience. Welcome again. As always, I'm so delighted to be here with you. I'm Peter Bregan. I'm a psychiatrist, physician, researcher, and this is Refounding America and Reclaiming Ourselves. So it's both political and psychological show. I have good news. Our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, got a tremendous book review in the Epoch Times. I do not know the person. Gosh, I have a lot of friends out there, but I don't know her. And it's just sees the depth of the book, the breadth of the book, talks about all the roles Ginger and I take, and you know, from scientist to psychologist to a spiritual guide, or it's just an amazing review. And the quotes from the book, I couldn't hardly believe I wrote them 3 years ago. So that's really, really good. And we have a fabulous guest today. Be back soon. Hi, folks. This is Peter Bregan again, and you're looking at Karen Kingston, who is a person I've become very impressed with and whom I like very much from the few times we've talked. And I liked her so much. First time I had her on the show, I called up Malkin at America Out Loud and connected her there. She's a huge source of information. I can't even begin yet to describe exactly what she does. I mean, she's a business analyst. And but she's so much more than that. I mean, this is a woman who's worked for a long time with Pfizer and has had her own company. And I gather that, Karen, that you educate the CEOs and the chief scientists on science and marketing. Is that right? Is it that?
I take the chief scientist officer's information and educate the doctors on the CSO's information. That's more what I do. But, you know, working with startups, I worked with a lot of startups. I worked with Johnson & Johnson's big VC firm, you know, J&J Development Corp. And then they had JJD, which was Red Script. And so working with the venture capital firms, yeah, I do work sometimes with the, you know, the CEO, the CSO, the CMO, all of them together to put together a pitch so that, you know, investors would understand value, attorneys would, and also physicians and stuff. So, yeah, it's I have a unique skill set, 25 years in a business. And, you know, I joke, I say I read so my clients don't have to. So you need someone who can come to the table with the attorneys, with the MBAs, with the PhDs and with the MDs, and then you always got the sales rep in the room, and you have to have someone that understands all of the information they're bringing to the table so that you can come to an agreement together. And then I'm also a pretty prolific reader and writer, I guess, too. So.
Well, you're doing amazing columns and amazing shows. At the start, let's tell people how they can, you know, read about you and communicate with you.
Sure. The best way is to go to my Substack, which is KarenKingston.substack. There's a couple articles that are free that I highly recommend. So if you Google just Karen Kingston Substack, Intended Consequences, that's a fantastic article. It's pretty brief. And I go through the evidence that shows that Pfizer and the NIH and the inventors knew that these were going to cause harm. So I go through the FDA documents, and I go through the documents from the inventors of the spike protein, and it's pretty interesting because what they state is they tested the spike protein against what they did is they take the mRNA, they infect human embryonic kidney stem cells to create that spike protein, and they tested against about 200 antibodies that our bodies would produce against coronaviruses and other viruses, and they all bounced off of the spike protein like bullets on Superman. So it's a pretty, it's a weapon that they created. I also recommend Karen Kingston's Substack and Google the commissioner's letter. And that's the evidence that I'm sharing in Collier County in Florida, where with the sheriffs, where they sent back a $1.4 million grant to not continue to promote the vaccine in a certain segment of Collier County. And we're going back down again this week to encourage the commissioners to pass a Bill of Rights, a medical Bill of Rights, to state that the federal government has no sovereignty in that county, because the government has been shown now to not be acting in citizens' best interests in regards to healthcare. So,
well, I think that this is such an important place to go. I think that with the federal government trying to sell out to the World Health Organization and to anybody else they can sell out to, and really destroying our sovereignty by promoting, they're promoting that they're going to sign a treaty with the World Health Organization that gives away sovereignty over anything that looks like a problem we have that could affect another country. I mean, it could be a justice issue. Their mandate's so broad at the UN and the World Health Organization. And also the amendments that may be coming up for a vote at the end that may do the same thing. So they're doing two things, both supported by the Biden administration. And one of the antidotes to that is to assert states' rights over the government's rights.
Yes, that's correct.
And this is a very important concept, and Karen's been working on. I mean, you're working with sheriffs, for goodness sakes, right?
Sheriffs and commissioners, because, I mean, I'm not getting responses from the attorneys general. So I'm at the county level to, work up to protect this country. But, yeah, I mean, the government hasn't been acting in the best interest of Americans, and for some reason, we're tolerating this abuse, if you will.
Yeah, well, we're joining the globalist regime. I mean, that's what Biden is. He's filthy rich from the Chinese communists, from the war zone as well. He's been involved in the Ukraine, got money from the Ukraine. He's gotten money from from Russia.
Yeah.
Through his son and...
It's through the root of Ukraine. So the Lieutenant General Kirov, when he investigated the bioweapons labs in the Ukraine, which we're developing, I mean, these are these biosynthetic pathogens that they're creating. And even our own former intelligence head, James Clapper, said that they're more dangerous than a nuclear weapon. And Lieutenant General Kirov, when he investigated this, he found funding coming through Hunter Biden into Metabiota, so directly to the president.
Wow.
Yeah, and the weapons were used in the Western Bloc, which is part of Southern Russia and what's over there, Albania, and they were experimenting. That means they were experimenting on innocent adults and children, exposure to air or water contamination or something.
Well, let people know about how the Russian head of biowarfare quoted you recently.
Oh, yeah. So,
I mean, that's like such a...
Well, what's interesting? Because we were just talking about our faith. And on December 31st, 2022, I wrote a Substack. And it's part of my, I'm a Christian, and I believe in God and Christ, and my faith is there. And I think like all of us, though, I'm also... a sinner. And I'm like, God, when are you going to show up? When are you, we get impatient and that's not fair. But I wrote a Substack and it was entitled Calling God's Army. And, I had put it out there saying, look, I've been in this war for almost 2 years now. And, I always use the expression before the devil can destroy, he must deceive, but he's wonderful at wasting people's time. And I'm like, how much have I been chasing after that next story or, people are telling me, look into this patent, look into that patent. And I've been wasting my time and I haven't found God's army who's truly, going to be able to, our plan, you know, to truly save this country and to save God's children. That was what was put on my heart, was to save God's children and, you know, keep them intact in His image. And I felt like a failure, but I also was like, God, I need your help. And that was December 31st. And then on January 20th was when the Lieutenant General of Russia's military biowarfare and nuclear program came forward and announced that they were starting an investigation. They had a criminal investigation into both, you know, but into the Department of Threat Reduction Agency, the DOD, and the Pentagon. That was 20 days later. And then, like on March 2nd, or, you know, the first week of March, so not much longer, he then announced that they were going to begin a criminal investigation into Pfizer. And they recommended, the Lieutenant General recommended, that a number of nations throughout Europe, Africa, and Asia nullify their contracts with Pfizer, you know, so that once they can begin prosecution. And he cited my med legal analysis as, you know, pretty much, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not, the evidence to prosecute Pfizer was based on my med legal analysis. You know,
that's wonderful. Cited,
you know, that Karen Kingston said that by definition, you know, that these mRNA injections are bioweapons per 18 USC 175, you know, so, you know.
Now you got to tell folks what those things are.
Yeah, so if you want to know, so if you call it, let's say we want to call a vaccine, we know it's a biological agent and we know it's toxic and we know that it has something called lipid nanoparticles. That's all in the documents, it's not hidden. So the lipid nanoparticles are a device and we're told it's biological. Whatever. So a bioweapon under federal law, federal criminal law in the United States, is any biological agent, toxin, or delivery device that does not prevent infection, does not prevent transmission, does not protect against disease, and was not done under bona fide research. And bona fide simply means that the research was deceptive, right? It was very deceptive. In this case, Pfizer admit that their research was both deceptive and fraudulent. Well, by definition, and now it causes harm. That's a bioweapon. We know these are not vaccines, and people are like, what do we call them? We'll call them what they are. They're bioweapons. And it's very important. So, you know, as a communication expert too, that's what I do in the industry, is strategy. I had these principles of communication that I would do workshops with my clients, you know, Johnson & Johnson, Medtronic, Thermo Fisher. And the principles of communication are relevance, credibility, and impact. And the first term of relevance is talk about things people care about to them. And make sure you use terminology that they understand and that the words mean the same thing to both parties, right? So if I said to people, and they know I'm a Christian and they don't know much about me, and I said, oh, I was up in Los Angeles and I was so blessed. I met with this angel and, I'm going to start my company. And people are like, is she crazy? Well, but angels in the venture capital world are early stage investors. Right? And LA, where I would go to meet with, LA actually has a group of angels that you would go meet with, right? So it has a different meaning depending on, so you really need to define what that word means. And what's happened, and words influence our thoughts. So what's happened is that we know the Department of Threat Reduction Agency, the NIH, they refer to, they know a vaccine, they refer to them as bioweapons. They refer to nanotechnology as lipids. So it's a way, and then when I say these contain nanotechnologies, because they do, once you go into the scientific documentation and the patents, they don't cover it up that these are nanotechnologies that host electromagnetic fields and have two-way communication and can do assembly. I mean, they're advanced technologies. And they're not lipids. And or when I use the term bioweapon, everyone goes, no, we don't want to use those terms. You know, that sounds crazy. It's not that it sounds crazy. It's that words influence thoughts. So if we never use the term weapon or bioweapon, and we never use the term nanotechnology, our minds can't conceive that. And we then cannot articulate the crime that happened against us. And that's a big part of the PSYOP, is to prohibit people from having the terminology to articulate exactly what's going on. And it's interesting because in 2007, the FDA decided that they weren't going to identify nanotechnology, right? They said, well, we're going to call it biology. We're going to call, you know, gold and graphene oxide nanoparticles that are used as diagnostics in cancer, we're going to call them biological agents and not call them devices. So it's intentionally deceptive what they're doing. And you know, as we're going down to Florida next week, and we're going to be talking to a lot of the residents, and people are frustrated that, well, these are weapons. Why isn't anyone seizing them? Why isn't, you know, why aren't the sheriffs doing anything? Why isn't the attorney general doing anything? Because they can't seize vaccines. They can seize weapons. So you're like, well, what about the Tylenol thing? Well, when the Tylenol was seized in, I think that was 1986 or 1988, and it was in Chicago. Well, the Tylenol had cyanide in it. So they were seizing a poison, right? They weren't seizing Tylenol. They were seizing something that could have poison. So people are getting frustrated that nothing's getting done, yet they're afraid to call these what they are, which are bioweapons. Because if you call them bioweapons, then your law enforcement and those in power to protect you have the authority to seize them. But if you're afraid to articulate the crime, then the crime, they're going to get away with murder. And that's interesting too, because like the other false pretense that was put out was that Pfizer had immunity and the FDA approval never happened. The FDA approval did happen. I'm actually like, when I first came on the scene, that was the one thing people actually gave my hat tip off to me was I do know FDA law, you know, and FDA approval. And then all of a sudden when the FDA approval happened on August 23rd, everyone's like, no, it didn't happen. It absolutely did happen. Product was manufactured in December, later that year. And I have all the documentation, you know, and if you say the FDA approval never happened, then you're saying the crime never happened, right? Because Pfizer can't falsely promote an FDA-approved product if the FDA approval never happened. And under Operation Warp Speed, they had to get an FDA approval. So Pfizer's immunity was based on the act as if principle, I call it. People watch this movie called Boiler Room, Ben Affleck in it. And it was about the stockbrokers that, you know, scammed a lot of people. And he has this act as if, right? Act as if you're a millionaire, act as if this, and then, you know, you'll become one because people will believe it. Well, Pfizer had infiltrated us to act as if they had immunity. That's literally the only thing that's protecting Pfizer is the act as if principle. And my Substack goes through like 10 ways to criminally prosecute Pfizer now, you know, the $3 trillion Substack, which was used by Brooke Jackson's attorney, Robert Barnes, to destroy Pfizer in court, to the point that Pfizer actually confessed that they said, well, we had a secret agreement to commit fraud. And then the judge said, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard, that you had a agreement together before you signed the contract that you were going to commit fraud, and now you expect to have immunity under it. So Pfizer's only immunity is based on our delusion, deception. I mean, and I go into John 17:17. I know it's about scripture, but when Jesus was praying for his disciples, understanding they had to go out in this world, a world that's, you know, run by evil and deception, he said, sanctify them with the truth. Your word is the truth. Now that is Jesus in scripture, but it's also the truth. And sanctify means to separate. So I think, you know, Dr. Bregan, as some of us come forward with irrefutable evidence and truth, you know, it is separating the wheat from the chaff at some point, you know, because we've been so deceived. I was on a call last night, an attorney got, the host brought an attorney on, and he says, you've been saying Pfizer has immunity, and, you know, Karen's saying that they don't, what says you? And he literally goes, I never said that. So I think we may be hearing some I never said that now from people, which is great. But, you know, I think people need to understand as the truth comes forward and people have been deceived, you know, you're going to start seeing some separation and people go, well, we can't have conflict in the movement.
Let me ask a question. About this. Supposedly some of the legislation that was passed gave Pfizer immunity. This is just to help understand where I don't understand. Yeah. Supposedly the Pfizer court gives them immunity, providing it's a vaccine, and you can't sue them directly for different. I know you want to get in. Let me just unravel here a little bit. Yeah. You're quicker than me on all this, which is wonderful, really. So what is all that? Is that all nonsense? Now, I know you can't get immune. I've heard you can't get immunity from fraud, really.
That's not true either.
So look, give me this whole response to some of this.
So under the Escobar, Escobar case, 2016 case, which the vendor corporation contracted the U.S. government, committed fraud, and the U.S. government said, it's not that significant, you know, that we're not going to cancel the contract, right? So let's say you ship 8,000 widgets a month, and then someone finds out you were only shipping 7,950 widgets a month, so you were scamming the government. And so the government's like, that's not enough. We need this widget so badly, that's not enough for us to cancel the contract, right? So you can commit fraud, and if the government says, we don't see it as being significant, we're not going to cancel our contract from it. And by the way, under the whistleblower law, you're supposed to be paid three times the amount of the damage to the government. So then the government's like, this is also just a way, you know, for basically employees, you know, to be a turncoat on their employer and just to say, haha, I found this mistake. Now you've got to pay three times the damage to the government to me, and I can retire early. There was like a $400 million case in pharma over something similar to that too. So that's what that is. So fraud is actually legal. Fraud's not legal even under the vaccine laws, though. It's actually legal under the vaccine law. So you can falsely promote a product. That's legal, unless the fraud is part of another crime, such as creating a bioweapon. So that's really important for people to know. So the concept that if they committed fraud, then everything's nullified. Again, the Supreme Court Escobar case says, no, that's not true. You can commit fraud, and if the government says, hey, we don't think it's significant, then it's thrown out. Now, the emergency use authorization laws that were put in place, in the Operation Warp Speed contract, they specifically say that you have to follow the 2017 guidance, which says the commissioner, the FDA commissioner, based on the evidence they have at date, will give authorization if they believe the product is safe. And they go through a number of reasons why the FDA commissioner may not authorize a product. And they include, you know, if it wasn't shown to be safe, right? So there is a certain level. You're not allowed to intentionally develop a bioweapon and unleash it on the American people. That's not protected under the law. So
a minute left before break, and then we'll come back and have an equal amount of about 22 minutes to talk. I'm trying to wrap my mind around this, and it's very important that we're talking for my sake and my work, because it's been hard for me to just call it a bioweapon, but looking at it and what it won't do, which is really prevent infection, and what it will do, which is make people very sick, it more and more begins to look like a weapon. And you said something, and let's just see, maybe we could just leave this as a little hanger. And you'd said something to me about Robert Malone, that he had to know he was making a bioweapon. Is that correct? Did you say that to me, or did I?
Well, if you read his patents, his early work.
Well, we got to change now, but okay. We got to take a break. But I just wanted to leave that out, because I don't think we fully explored that on the radio show. We're going to go to break now. We're talking with Karen Kingston, a super source of information. Well, hello again, my wonderful audience. Really serious and difficult, important things we're talking about. You can probably tell that I've been snuffling a little bit. I have what feels like the beginning of a cold. But, you know, people care about us. I've been really getting the sense lately of how much people care about us. And I've had that on and off over my life, but never so much as now. And in particular, Ginger, who does most of the communicating with the world. Well, Ginger is fine, but she's sick. She came down with COVID, most likely, 2 days ago, 2.5 days ago. And it began with the worst weakness she's ever experienced in her life, and a headache, which she rarely gets. No particular gastrointestinal or respiratory problems, just enormous fatigue and this headache. And we got on the phone and talked with some of the good docs we know around the country. And one of them became concerned enough. He said, "I just don't know. You know, it could be sepsis. You're so weak." She couldn't really walk the 10, 15 steps to the bathroom without my help. And when I wanted to get her blood pressure standing, I mean, she literally just draped herself on me while we got her blood pressure. She's never been like that. She doesn't like being like that. You know, she's not one of those people that wants to be, "Oh God, I'm sick." And so we actually went to the ER, got some blood tests. We're still not clear what they found. They kind of, I think, got uneasy about us. Maybe they looked this up. We were in the ER for only 3 hours from getting there to leaving, and they never even put a gown on her. So, I mean, I've just never seen anything like that quite happen. And I got quite anxious in the middle of it because I realized I'd made the biggest mistake of all. I didn't bring ivermectin with me. And never do that. Don't make that mistake. And he was going to offer me the Paxlovid for ginger. And I said, "Well, I don't think the studies are so good on that." And he said, "Oh, they're really great, 50,000. Then we got rid of those silly drugs like hydroxychloroquine. And so I realized there wasn't much I could do. I said, "How long will we have to be in today, do you think?" And he said, "Well, you know, if you don't want," he was very pleasant, "you don't want the Paxlovid, you can go home anytime." And I didn't know he meant any time. And so we left without the lab results, which we're still trying to find. So Ginger is still feeling ill. It's gone into her chest. She is not so weak anymore, thank God. She got up around breakfast and did some stuff around the house. And came down this evening and did some stuff. So she's on the upward mend, but I'm sure I'm not really myself. That for those of you who really know me well, I just don't have that connectivity tonight, engagement that I might usually have. I am virtually certain that come next show next week, I'm going to be able to tell you she's fully recovered. Say prayers for us. Say prayers for her to get well. She hasn't got the best autoimmune system. She's had stuff her whole life, for 40 years together, that are autoimmune. We didn't get vaccinated, thank goodness. She's taken all the stuff she needs, and she's even got portable oxygen and the outfit in the house that she can turn on if she needs that. And we have friends who just will come by anytime we want. But that is happening, and you know, we love the folks out there, and many of them love us. And I wish we could hang together, be together more. I wish there weren't such destructive influences in bringing us together. Destructive influences that complain about destructive influences. And you know what I'm talking about, and he talks about it all the time. And it's funny. That is not funny, but it's odd that I rarely talk about him. Okay. She's going to make it. This is not a variant that actually takes lives, but it's really wearing my girl out. I sent Malcolm at America Out Loud, who lives some secret place in Florida, I think. I said to him, I'm up in upstate New York. I said, "Malcolm, can you get over here and give me a hand with the dogs and the dishes and the taking care of Mom?" And he laughed and he said, "I'll be there in 45 minutes. He didn't come. All right, so I'm smiling a little just talking about this, and I think my colors actually come back a little. I have a wonderful guest today. I mean, Karen is, and what a great name, Karen Kingston. She'll be writing romance novels. You're such a source of information. Did you want to put something up? You would talk to me about that the people who were working back, including Malone, on this had to know they were essentially building a weapon more than a vaccine. And I'd never heard that before.
Well, you know, and I think here's the thing is, you know, when I read through the patents and the research, you know, and we can bring the Substack up soon, you know, the first study, the cationic liposome for mRNA transfection, is about taking non-human DNA from fireflies and the African clawed frog and a fruit fly and infecting it into human cells. And then the early, and it just Dr. Malone's name is on these, and he's proclaimed to be the one of the inventors of the mRNA vaccines. And then when it, so it's not that, I think people think, I go to source documents. When I look at the source documents, now some of the source documents have Dr. Malone's name on them. I don't think they're horrific because Dr. Malone's name on them. I think what I'm reading is horrifying, just like when I read the first patent for Moderna on their website. And, you know, I sent an email saying that these are technologies that can, you know, target the heart, lungs, kidneys, reproductive system, and cross the blood-brain barrier into bioweapons. And so when I read the publications from Dr. Malone and his patents, I have the same conclusion. They're intended to do genetic editing to the human body with non-human and also non-mammal DNA. Dr. Malone, even we can show this video clip. There's a link to it. When he was on Glenn Beck, he talked about his mRNA vaccines, or RNA vaccines, are the gateway into transhumanism. And he defines transhumanism as biological and mechanical edits to the, you know, the human being. So that's integrating us with technology. But that's what the mechanical.
Can we get that clip up at this point? Either the audio.
Report from a joint report from the government of the UK and Germany about transhumanism.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, this is one of the agendas of the World Economic Forum. That's not hidden. It's not a conspiracy. Transhumanism. And they talk about the RNA vaccines as an entry point, kind of opening that space ethically and otherwise. So that's part of the push for why these particular products is it relates to that transhumanism agenda. And the
explain for anybody who doesn't know transhumanism. Explain it. Break it down.
So transhumanism is the belief, is the technology suite, I think is the best way to put it, mm-hmm. around the idea of both mechanical and biological modification of humans.
I think there's going to be a lot of breakthroughs on the medical front, particularly around synthetic.
Yeah.
Not condemnatory at that point.
Well, I can. We can look at his words. I mean, he says mRNA is the gateway or the entry point into transhumanism.
It's not like he just figured this out yesterday.
No, but he also says transhumanism is the suite of technologies.
Yeah.
For biological and mechanical modifications to the human. So the suite of technologies. My conclusion is that the term mRNA is a sham. It's a code word for the suite of nanotechnologies for the purposes of merging humans to create genetic edits to the human. You can go to that Substack and see it yourself, but like this is Dr. Malone's patent. The technology, the mRNA technology, this is his patent from 1996, was for the purposes of genetically editing the human genome. It says right here in the background, the present invention relates to the introduction of naked DNA and RNA sequences into a vertebrate, so like a human's a vertebrate, to achieve controlled expression of a polypeptide or a protein, right? And then the next sentence says, current research in gene therapy has focused on permanent cures in which DNA is integrated into the genome of the patient. They're talking about humans. They're talking about genetically editing humans. And this is from delivery of exogenous DNA sequences in a mammal, where Dr. Malone is listed as one of the inventors. So, his early research studies are about integrating genetic material from insects and reptiles into human cells. So that's just what it is. I don't think that's ethical. I don't think it's ethical.
Curious as to what one of my recent neurology textbooks would say about all this. And it was just they were dealing with just the beginning of this gene editing. And they were estimating that hundreds of neurological diseases were being identified as genetic defects that could be potentially curable. Mm-hmm. I could certainly see how somebody could get into that method of thinking about it in a very, very ethical way. But once you start talking about transhumanism, you're not talking about editing out a disease, a cancer gene, or editing out a gene that's going to, kill children or soon after they're born, which falls into the traditional concept of medicine, although very edgy medicine. There's a sense about the idea, as Malone was talking about it, it's transformative of human nature. And that's very different.
Yeah, the creation of it's the destruction of humanity. It's the destruction of the Homo sapiens species. Humanity is created perfectly in God's image, and it's destroying it. It's destroying us. And I say destruction because if you look, follow Elon Musk, you know, he calls his sort of artificial intelligence humanoids. And he says humanoids are going to outnumber humans soon. And I'm like, well, if we're manufacturing these things called humanoids, why would we manufacture ourselves out of jobs? That doesn't make any sense. But again, a humanoid is a term for transhumanism. And transhumanism is a part of biotechnology, right? Biotech is taking bio.
Yeah, it's not about curing disease. They don't really mean curing disease. They mean transforming human beings in very substantial ways.
So I think the manufacturing of the humanoids is not from a factory. It's through these mRNA technologies to transform us. And if we ever have, you know, if our posterity has the opportunity to have children, you know, and children again. Yeah. So and part of the transhumanism too is to, you know, decrease the number of humans. So
definitely.
So when you're saying
to economically and socially classify them in the most amazing fashion, they really do have a hierarchy of usefulness. And they don't really see us as inherently more useful than animals. Yuval has a whole section in one of his books about, is the wolf howling essentially better and more important than Beethoven writing the Beethoven's Ninth Symphony? I mean, quite seriously, and goes on to say the main difference that he can see is the amount of data provided by the Beethoven, not beauty or harmony or anything, the amount of data provided by that symphony so outdoes that the wolves' data. And he calls this the religion of datism.
Yeah.
So
and there,
it's quite bizarre. It's quite bizarre.
Elon Musk is on board with it too. I know people love Elon, but you know, he wants his humanoid, he wants transhumanism with Neuralace, Neuralink. He's a fan of mRNA. Clay Clark cites him in those video clips too. One of the things that that he said, you know, you were saying they don't think much of us. No, they think of us as insects. And Elon Musk even said, when it comes to artificial intelligence, humans need to merge with it. And if we don't merge with AI, he said it's just like humans and you know, anthills. Like if we're trying to build in a, you know, what we want in a community, and there's an anthill there, bye-bye anthill. So what he's saying is AI, if humans aren't going to merge with AI, bye-bye humans. And
yeah, he is actually saying that we have to prepare to fight AI if it turns on us. I mean, he's got it all set up with the devil and
But he's pro-AI. I think people are confused because he's very much an advocate for But he pretends like, you know, but he tells us what it's going to do, but does nothing to stop it. Yeah. So that's, you know.
I want you to know we're not so taken with him that I didn't write a column a year or two ago really attacking his concepts of melding machines and people and all the advantages that had come from it. And It's mostly fantasy, really. It isn't. It's so destructive to meddle with the human brain. It's just going to be a mess.
The intention is destruction. So, you know, what's interesting is, you know, you're talking about, did they know that these were going to be used as weapons? And even Bobby Kennedy said, look, Ralph Baric and Anthony Fauci for 20 years were doing research and development with U.S. taxpayer dollars under the guise of vaccine development, but it's bioweapons.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I was on a call last night, and one attorney says, yeah, well, they've been researching mRNA, you know, for 20 years, it's actually been 30 years. And for whatever reason, the products never got approved because in a, you know, really within a few days or weeks of someone getting injected with this gene editing technology, they came down with a severe disease or died, right? Because they're weapons. And they're like, well, they just didn't work before. No, they work as they're intended to work. They're intended to cause disease, disabilities, and death.
And I could come to no other conclusion than that after reading the whole line of research about how deadly they were right up to the moment of Trump approving them and being so excited about rolling them out. I think he's totally taken in. And they knew all about all the deaths that were going to occur way well ahead of time.
Yes.
You know, we wrote this recent, folks, we've got this recent report on Malone that in January, I should mention this, it's so relevant, in January of 2020, now you got to put your mind back to January of 2020, that's when Malone is meeting with a CIA guy who is established at the UN, at the Wuhan,
yeah,
and he's getting very early information to maybe set up a team and do something. He doesn't say it ever happened, that they ever got going. Well, at that time, he had finished a paper, very scientific, many illustrations, many research projects done in the lab by him and by a fellow named Ritchie, R-I-C-H-I, who, R-I-C-H-E, Ritchie, who was at MIT, big guys. At the time, Malone was the medical director of a medical tech company that was deeply involved with the deep state, with the DO, Department of Defense. And Malone published a paper on ResearchGate, which is where reputable scientists are allowed to put up their papers before they go through an approval process. And the paper basically said that through the research they've done and reading all the literature and a lot of testing of all the various proteins surrounding the spike protein and its manifestations, that these interventions, these mRNA and DNA interventions that were coming up with the SARS-CoVs were too dangerous to apply to humans, even experimentally. It's that dramatic.
That's true.
And you can find this, the paper is on our website, and it's also on Malcolm Out Loud. Ginger and I wrote it. And then in March, 3 months later, still in the very early stages, 2 months later, the same paper appears on the pre-publication platform of Lancet, the itself a horror show of a that just totally gave itself over to lying, cheating, and stealing for the globalists, literally. It wanted to be a very big global entity. They outlined all their global ambitions at the Lancet. I think it's just a journal. It's more than that. And they put it up on their pre-publication platform. And there, they actually do a little vetting. They don't do the, excuse my snooze. Excuse me. I don't know. I'm hoping this is just a cold. So so they get approval. In other words, they have to go through some vetting that this is worthwhile and important enough to put up on Lancet's pre-publication. Now, it never gets published in peer-reviewed form because, of course, they're not going to approve that paper. I think that probably led to a major intervention in Malone's life that he put that paper up. I wouldn't be at all surprised if some bigwigs didn't come to him and say, hey, what are you doing? You get do this?
You know what people think? It's again, I just go back to source documents and source evidence. You know, source, what's the source? Consider the source, right? And Dr. Malone's name is, you know, is the source of a lot of this information because he has such credibility. His statements on their own are as valid as a peer-reviewed journal. My statements are not, right? I don't have that. And
I understand what you're saying.
And so he's the source, and what I've read, these were always weapons. I think you were deceived into thinking that they could ever be therapies. They've only resulted in disease, disabilities, and death. But what I pray is that, you know, we have Dr. Malone is our Paul, right? He goes from a Saul to a Paul, right? Like that, you know, maybe there were times when this was, something that he thought was okay. You know, like I said, saying transhumanism, entering into transhumanism is ethical or otherwise. I don't think the destruction of the human race is ethical, you know, but, you know, maybe,
Well, it'd be amazing if he could come clean. But the problem he faces is that he never told anybody about his paper. And we had to find the paper. And we are done.
Yeah.
15 seconds to go. He never told that, gave that. We have all kinds of videos where he is never saying anything to anybody that he knows that these shouldn't even be given as experiments. And he's telling people to take them.
To say that, though. That would be fantastic. How powerful would that be?
Okay, yes, that's what I write about. Yeah, he could have saved, I describe it as a man who could have saved the world and didn't. We have a lot of them, though. Okay, I want to talk to you some more and more and more. Karen Kingston, goodbye, dear.